their individual needs. So that's a little bit about what we do. And in our history, we have seen a lot of evolutions in our industry. So trucks have gone from being, they are automated now. So instead of those old days of guys and gals hanging on the back, manually lifting those carts, the truck does it for us. Very safe and efficient for us. And we run on renewable and compressed natural gas now for our trucks in this region. And recycle in the 90s, early 2000s, used to be in separate bins, right? You had to put paper here and bottles here and that kind of thing. And that's evolved into a single stream cart, right? So we can put everything into one container, waste management collects it, we separate it, and ship it out. That really was designed to make recycling more accessible, easier, and encourage participation. And recycle, again, is in the midst of further evolution, and that's why I'm here to talk to you this evening. Technical difficulties. Sorry. Okay, there.
It was like you're playing the piano up there.
Yeah, add a little music. So as you may have heard, there certainly have been some grumblings, and it's been a hot topic with us at Waste Management. China has implemented a series of customs programs that have effectively turned our recycling world upside down. They started on this path really in 2013 with Operation Green Fence, which was really aimed at increasing the quality of recyclable materials. And so from 2013 to 2017, Waste Management was able to take steps to mitigate the effects of these programs and meet those quality standards. And then in July 2017, was the China National Sword policy that came in and was really a crackdown on contamination. And shortly after that, starting January 1st of 2018, came bans of materials, including mixed waste paper, some plastics, and metals. In addition to banned materials, they lowered their acceptable rate of contamination to just 0.5%. And so to give some perspective, our Cascade Recycling Center, which is where the recyclables for the city of Mill Creek are collected and taken in Woodinville, we operated about a 12% contamination rate. And so these 0.5% is nearly unachievable with current equipment and costs.
What do you mean by contamination?
So garbage mixed in with recycle, food and liquid often, you know, in empty bottles. So we should be rinsing them and putting them in dry and loose. And so wet cardboard and things like that are unusable. Food gets mixed in, like I said. So things that don't belong with it if we're not cleaning them out the way that we should be.
Or do we have, and I'm sure we do, are we recycling here in the U.S. or is everything exported to China?
So prior to some of these policies, most of the recycle was being shipped to China. I mean, when you think about our location here in the Pacific Northwest, it was very cost effective and made sense. And China simply is the world's largest manufacturing nation and was the single largest consumer of recyclables. Since these implementations, obviously we've had to adapt. We are looking at more local markets if we can, but there are still some international markets, and of course shipping to other places has higher costs as well. So not only are we up against, you know, the contamination where we really have to get into that processing and that cost has gone up, but because China effectively was not accepting recyclable materials for a while in 2018. The market has been kind of flooded. Everybody has been looking for somewhere else to take their material, and so the value of the recyclables has decreased drastically. And so that's kind of what we're up against.
And that's essentially their goal, though, is to drive the cost down. So we'd be happy to just get rid of it at some point, pass the cost on to the consumer. I mean, that's basic economics.
I don't tend to know what China's intention is. I know, they're specifically aimed at taking special actions against foreign garbage smuggling was in their policy. And so I don't know the intention behind it. Like I said, we've had to, here in Woodinville, slow down our processing lines, our belts, and add employees so that we're able to grab as much of those contaminated materials out as possible so that we can improve the quality of the material that we're preparing and, you know, trying to find those end markets for. We've teamed with local and national organizations to provide some educational tools. We have our website, recycleoftenrecycleright.com, has some educational tools available for customers. And it's very universal messaging, very clear and concise, trying to get back to basics, recycling bottles, cans, paper, cardboard, keeping food and liquid out, no bags, right, plastic bags. And then we also have our OOPS tag, which I don't know if you can see very clearly, but this is what drivers use if they see contamination in a customer's cart as they're servicing it, right? Well, this tag here has been designed specifically to target recycled contaminants that we often see. And so the pictures are very helpful, I think, for customers. And we'll talk about those tags a little bit more also. And I just wanted to highlight too a few of the outreach efforts we've done in the city of Mill Creek recently. So in the summer of 2018, so last summer, we had our Recycle Corps interns visit all new businesses in the city to help provide recycling information, tips, get those programs off the ground for new businesses. In October, our outreach coordinator, Carissa, works in our Kirkland office. She went door-to-door to the 400 units at the Hawthorne Apartments to also do that outreach education on recycle, provide some tips. And then in April of this year, Carissa as well hosted a recycle information station at Jackson High School for the Earth Week campaign there. And actually, this photo is from that event. So we have a wheel, you spin it, and then you tell us where you think that item goes. Does it go in the garbage, the recycle? Just kind of a fun way to interact and provide that education. We've added some tips on customer invoices. Again, that just kind of top three things that we're targeting that's basic, universal, applies to all customers. Recycling empty bottles, cans, paper, cardboard, keep food and liquid out, and don't bag recyclables. And then, of course, our drivers are using the tags that really help identify specific items for customers so they know, you know, what not to include. What else do we have available? What else can we do, right? We offer tours of our CRC, Cascade Recycle Center, for residents, businesses, schools, and community groups for Mill Creek. And so that's a great way to see what happens to recycling after we take it from the curb and really demonstrate how important it is to keep bags, especially, and other contaminants out. And then we want customers to connect with us. So we have recyclenw@wm.com as an email that we promote on all of our outreach material, both digital and hard copy. And then we have coordinators like Carissa that are available to answer questions. And so I hope in pointing out just a few of the things that we've done recently, it really demonstrates Waste Management's commitment to recycling. You know, we want to and strive to be responsible stewards of the environment, even with the challenges that we're facing with these new policies. So that is really important for us. And so with the steps that we've taken, we are in need of help from the City of Mill Creek, from this council, to ensure that recycling remains a viable program. And so I'm here tonight to very humbly make these three requests that are on the screen. The first is an extraordinary rate increase to cover the cost of recycle that has gone up. But I want to point out that's not the only thing that we're here for, right? It is important for recycling programs that we reduce contamination, so that's another piece we'll talk about, and that we modify our recycling list so that we're accepting material that really is recyclable. We're focusing on recycling the right things. So let's dive into the requests. And so we'll start with the rate increase request. This is proposed, again, to help in covering the cost, the increase in our processing cost, again, caused from needing to slow down those lines, add more employees so that we're getting the bad or contaminated materials out. Also, having to ship to other places, find new markets, those kind of things. The processing of materials has gone up quite a bit. And at the same time, the value of recycling has gone down quite drastically. And so those are the two components that are in the calculations. And you do have a breakdown of the calculations in your packet, and I'm happy to answer any questions on that. And I, you know, want to point out the methodology for this increase was approved by the WUTC, and so it is the same formula that we've used in asking for a rate increase in our filings with them. And you can see on the slide there are some neighboring cities that have also we've approached and have approved the rate increase. And I want to point out we're not just asking the City of Mill Creek, right? This is a universal kind of problem, and so we've been approaching all of our municipalities.
So, Marcella, you're asking for a rate increase, but you're asking to amend the existing contract that we already have, correct?
That's right.
So how long does this contract go through, the one we both have signed on?
This contract goes until June 30th of 2022.
22, okay. Substantial. Thank you.
Like I said, you do have a breakdown of the calculations. This is kind of a snapshot of what it would look like for our customers, okay? And although the methodology, like I said, is approved by the UTC, and that's the formula we've been using, when you look at the calculations, you can see that we only used the tonnage collected by Mill Creek customers. So we're not, you know, you're not subsidizing any neighboring cities or anything like that. It's just based on the contribution of recycling tons that come out of the city. So, you know, what we're seeing for a residential customer is an impact of about 84 cents per month for the different sizes, depending on what size garbage they have. And it's not a request that I'm here to make very lightly. As residents of this and neighboring communities, we understand the weight of asking for an increase in rates. The market disruptions that I've talked about, these strict policies, unfortunately, have made this a necessary ask.
So there been a windfall savings, would you guys have given us a rebate?
That's a great question. I think in certainly in our UTC agreements, we have a rebate structure built in. It's not built into this contract, but it could be potentially, right? So that is something, you know, we could look at in future contracts. It's not built in the way our contract is. It does not account for that.
Right, because you guys formed a plan, made a contract that you thought would work given all the information you had at the time, and we agreed to it. Not even sure why we're here.
We did agree, and again, I'm not making the request lightly. It's just these changes that were unforeseen. We could not have predicted that within a few months, materials would not be accepted anymore to our, you know, major exporter. So
Mayor
this
Pro
is
Tem-
an extenuating circumstance.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzkla?
Don't envy you being the messenger.
Thank you, sir.
The question I had is on the three reasons you list, two of them are contamination charge and recycling list changes. Are those related? So I'm looking at the slide that has the remove items with limited markets. Has the contamination level of the recycling from Mill Creek residents and businesses actually increased, or is it increasing because what they're putting in the recycling now is now considered contamination because the market changed?
I don't know that we have that specific data on what the contamination rate is specific to Mill Creek, because everything goes to the CRC. And I don't know that we have had seen an increase in contamination, but it was acceptable before, the contamination that we had, and now it's just not. And so we are having to get stricter on, you know, the quality, you know, improving our quality in order to have a market to sell these items to.
No, I understand that, and you might not have the answer. I'm just trying to sort through whether the contamination is something that our residents and businesses are causing, or if they're doing the same thing they've always done. It's just now that some of the stuff they're putting in the recycling is considered contaminants because it's not on the approved list of what you can turn around and sell. And so I'd be interested to know whether or not anyone at Waste Management might have some information on that.
Yeah, I can definitely find out and follow up. You know, I do want to be clear that anything that's on the acceptable list right now in our contract is being collected and taken. And there might be very obscure markets, but we're out there trying to find them, because if it's in our contract now, we know we have to take that. But let me take a note here.
Yeah, I am. Thank you.
Councilmember Mike Todd.
Thanks. Maybe kind of addresses this, and let me know if I'm off base here, but my understanding here, so a few years ago, the whole thing was single stream recycling, recycle everything, we can deal with it. So a Starbucks cup, so long as it was dry, was recyclable. Or a frozen TV dinner box that has kind of that waxy surface on it, that was recyclable. Well, those now are not just like mixed office paper. This stuff is valuable. That
right.
Frozen TV dinner box is no longer valuable. So to your question, is that called a contaminant now? I think it is. It's something that China doesn't want. They don't want that frozen TV dinner box anymore. So part of this is an education. Whereas a few years ago, it was recycle everything. We really need to tell citizens, no, we just want this clean paper, the newspaper, clean cans, go back to kind of what we used to do in our three bins. The industry has kind of figured out that this didn't work. It didn't work because China before was like, we'll take all that stuff. We had free shipping containers that had come over with products from China. We sent them back with garbage or with recycling. And China's gone like, whoa, we don't really need all your stuff anymore. So the market's kind of changed. If that helps educationally. I'll chime in here, though. I already heard Councilmember Vaughn say what I would have said. It's like, this was a business risk when you formed, not you individually, but Waste Management formed this contract. This isn't a total surprise. 2013, Operation Green Fence, aimed at increasing the quality of materials. This was not a surprise in July of 2018 when they came with National Sword. This had been kind of coming at you guys, and you had been working with it and working with it. Somebody in your strategic planning department probably should have been going, you know, there's a risk out there that China's going to say, cut it out, we don't want this anymore. And so that should have been factored into your pricing of contracts. And I'm with the, you know, others potentially here, that a contract is a contract. I'm open to helping educate people about getting us on board with good recycling, but I'm not interested in our citizens absorbing the risk that you took so that your profits and your margins is the same. What you've presented here is that so your profit margin and your operating margins and your profits are the same as they were before. It's not our, not entirely our risk. You know, if anything, we would split it, but I'm not interested in splitting it. I think it's your issue. Thanks.
And Councilmember Steckler.
I have a couple questions and then a suggestion. I'm curious, the contamination charge you want to charge, you don't mention that here. What are you thinking of charging for that?
Yeah, I definitely, that's on our next slide, and it should be in the rate sheet, not maybe on that breakdown, but in the attachment B that's in the letter of understanding.
Oh, it's not in your slideshow presentation, it's in this other document?
Yes. No, it's not on the slideshow, but I am going to cover that.
Oh, you are in
yes.
A minute. Okay. Then my other question on that is, everything goes into a bucket, a tote. The
yes.
tote is dumped in the truck. How do you know who contaminated and who didn't to levy a contamination charge?
Yeah, so shall I move on to my next slide?
Well, yeah, I would like you to answer that, but before you go on, because I want to stay with this same question that's coming out here as well. It's pretty obvious that the situation waste management has found itself in, the market's changed. And one of the solutions for that is to raise the rates to the people whose garbage you're collecting due to a recycling industry change. We're having a struggle. I personally am having a struggle with that. It's like, okay, this is failing, so I'm going to charge this area over here an extra fee because this isn't working out like we thought it would. That doesn't sound like a really good solution. It sounds like we've got a problem in the recycling industry that maybe we could help you with and help find solutions for. But charging another area that is really irrelevant, but it's a way to help make up for the loss you have, doesn't seem very fair, I think, to any of us up here. My question is the amount, and Councilmember Todd said this, the recyclable items that you want is significantly less than it used to be. And in all of your literature and everything else, your number one vehicle for teaching people isn't going to the schools and talking to the kids and hope they talk to their parents. They have these things called totes that everybody has, and it's the one focal point to be able to talk to every recycling individual in Mill Creek. So why not limit the recyclable items and put a large label on the tote lid, which tells us what you want from now on, and you don't want all these other things, we'll put them in our garbage. But I am also curious if we're going to be able to even tell if we put the right stuff in there or not. So the increase to a garbage fee doesn't seem to me to be the right solution to a problem with the recycling side of the business. I'd like to fix the recycling side of the business so that it works for you. So maybe it might be just limiting what we can recycle from now on. We educate the people, and we educate them via the totes, not via other vehicles, would be my suggestion. But, of course, this now gets into, tell me about the contamination charge and how you're going to track that down.
You've got it.
But how are you going to know if people are recycling correctly or not?
I'm just going to take a note.
Stephanie wants to add on before you move on.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Councilmember Steckler. I have a friend who lives in another Washington city, and recently she had called me and she was discussing how her recycling had changed, what was acceptable to go in her recycling bin. And it's similar to what Councilmember Steckler is saying. She'd just gotten the information from them telling her that they couldn't accept these items anymore. So she's going to change her behavior and knowing that and not be putting that in the recycling. So it seems to me that that would be an easier solution than going and making people happier, than going and raising their rate, and wanting to charge a $25 contamination charge on top of their raised amount. So it seems like we're charging twice And $25 can add up quite a bit to people who can't, who are living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that education would work a lot better.
Education is an important piece of fixing the recycling. You're spot on there. And, you know, I would like to get into the contamination charge. As you said, it's a one-time $25 charge. And so, yes, education, our cart tags, you know, we are hoping that is enough, right, to change that behavior. And that's what this charge is for, is to drive that customer behavior when those other efforts break down. And that's what it's designed to do. So, you know, as a customer myself, okay, so let's just say I put plastic bags in my recycle, which I hope we all know we should not do. Okay, so the driver comes to empty my container. He or she may not see those plastic bags because the lid's closed on the cart, but as they are tipping the container, they see the contents fall out. And that's how we can see the contaminants. Now, at that point, it's unsafe for the driver to take materials out there, so we do not allow them to do that. Instead, we have our tag. Our driver will check the no plastic bags here and leave that. It's very strong adhesive onto the container so that as a customer, when I come home to pull that container back, I see the tag. And I'm like, okay, no plastic bags. Right? Now, I'm picked up on Tuesdays, and I do my grocery shopping on Sundays. So between Tuesday and Sunday, a lot can happen. I have a hard time remembering what I had for dinner last night. And so I do my grocery shopping. I put the bags in again, forgetting that I got this tag. Come Tuesday, the driver comes, sees that, the plastic bags again, leaves me another tag. And we hope truly that this second tag is all it will take to change customer behavior and say, oh, no, I'm not supposed to put that in there, right? That is our goal. Our goal is to have our customers recycle correctly. But let's say that that doesn't work. Either customers more forgetful than me, or, you know, a lot of things can happen. And so on that third time is when we still leave the tag. We always leave the tag. It's really important to, you know, give customers that information. But then a one-time charge of $25 is what we're proposing. Again, to reinforce that this is a problem and we can't continue to let that happen.
Well, I hope you can get information. I mean, this isn't directed at you, but that gets to the point I'm making. We're getting double hit for this problem because you want to charge our residents $25 if they don't obey, but you're still charging them the increased rates if they do, if we adopted this. And so to me, those two justifications for requesting this change are one and the same.
Well, they are separate only because the increase is to cover to make us whole from the increase in processing cost and the decreased commodity value. The contamination charge is to drive that behavior so that these things don't keep happening.
Right, but I guess my point is, say you're wildly successful and we've slapped tags on everyone's bins every week and they stop putting in what's not supposed to be put in and they comply 100%. Never going to happen, but let's assume it did.
Be great.
They're still paying the additional higher rates, even though they're not putting in the stuff that's driving down your margins. That's my issue with this request.
But the cost to process the materials hasn't changed, even though we are fixing behaviors, hopefully, with our tags and our education, and the decreased commodity value isn't changing because we're fixing it necessarily. I mean,
I understand, but we've been presented with three justifications for this cost increase, and what you're really referring to is number one, the extraordinary recycling rate increase. If we had this contamination charge, if we accepted it, and everyone complied completely, then two and three aren't a justification for raising the rates because we're not putting in the materials that's causing you the loss of revenue. So
Councilmember Bond and Cavallari.
If somebody just, so you covered the contamination of recycle. If somebody just puts recycled items into their garbage, do you monitor that and then fine them for putting, so where I'm going with this, I don't think you do. Do you?
We do not have a process.
So I don't have as much faith in human nature as you do. And the sticker's working. What I could see is I got a $25 fine. I'm going to put my blue bin on the side of the house, and I'm never going to get fined again because I'm just going to put everything in my garbage can. And then you guys can just figure out what's good and what isn't. So that's not a win either. So for I'm on board with where you're trying to go in this sort of a perfect world. And I feel really stupid sitting here, and I'm going to go ahead and just fall on my own sword. I didn't know you couldn't put those plastic bags in there. I'm always stuffing them in there, and I feel terrible. So I'm going to do better from now on. But I thought I was Mr. Good on plastic in my, you know, so I feel stupid.
You know,
you're the gutsiest council member out
there. And I'm wondering now if I ever had a sticker, and did I ever even look at it or something. So I should know, and I don't. So I have some wiggle room that there's probably other people that are just well-intended but completely oblivious. So there is an educational opportunity here that we might be able to help on, which is then separate from what you guys are talking about. So to your request on behalf of your company, and I don't blame the messenger, what's in it for us? If you guys had saved a ton of money, if you found out you could ship this stuff to Guam or whatever, and we could, you know, do something, and you saved a bunch of money, you all wouldn't come back here going, hey, we overbid that, we got a little more than we needed, we're going to give some back. We know that. So somebody somewhere making a lot of money maybe missed this, whatever's going on at Waste Management side. So what's in it for us? I mean, if we say no, we're going to be a hard line where we'll see you on the 22nd of June in 2022, and then you guys go, well, we'll be there, but we're going to probably have to ask for X because we lost Y, but if you meet us here, we can negotiate some sort of savings so your customers aren't hit. So, yeah, you're going to hit for 80-some cents today, but we're not going to hit you for $3.50 in 2 years from now. I mean, is there something that's in this for us, being good partners with you, in your situation?
Yeah, I think you spoke right to it there in, you know, right now we need to fix this recycle, you know, these things to help fix the recycling program so that it remains a viable program to continue on into the future. And I can't predict what rates would be in 2022, but certainly I think you hit it right on the nail right on the head there, that making some of these adjustments now is going to help our programs in the future.
Okay, Councilmember Cavallari.
Thanks, Mayor. I definitely don't envy you being the messenger. I think we're all going to echo those same sentiments. As I said in the beginning, this contract goes to June of 2022. Now, if the companies, and honestly, I know things happen in the market, gold goes down, silver goes up, these things happen, these fluctuations, it's all based on market strategy and whatnot. We pay a lot of people to do that, but why would we do that? Why would we agree to, yeah, you can change our contract and add more dollars to it, we'll just pass it along to them. I wasn't on board from the beginning, so I don't mean that disrespectfully. A deal's a deal. That has to mean something at some point, whether you absorb the costs elsewhere or pass them along to someone else. We'll have this conversation in June of 2022. I think that's the fair deal here. That's kind of where I stand. And again, Marcella, I feel bad for the spot you're in, but I would feel worse for the citizens I tried to impose an additional tax on.
Yeah, no, I can understand your position as well, and thank you for understanding mine. And you're right. You know, we did this, our contract, but like I said, we couldn't have known that it would be this drastic. We saw some changes happen in 2013, but nothing that nothing as drastic as what happened in 6 months of, you know, July of 2017 to January.
But in fairness, I don't mean to interrupt you. Didn't we renegotiate this in 2017?
It's 2015.
Not 2015. Okay. Not 2013, though.
No. 2015. Seven-year contract.
Councilmember Steckler?
So going back to what I was talking about on the contamination charge, the sticker that you're talking about, maybe I misunderstand, but it looks like the sticker goes on after I've created a violation. And I'm going to charge notices given to the consumer that they violated a contamination in the recycling. They're going to be charged $25. Is that correct?
After the third time.
After the third time. So, echoing what everyone else is saying, we don't favor a rate increase due to fluctuation in the industry, but in the true interest of partnership, how can we help? How can we help waste management reduce some of its costs? And I think Councilmember Holtzclaw was mentioning this. You've got increased costs due to this contaminated material that has to, you know, it's taking longer to clean it out. Let us help educate the consumers, put a limited list of recyclable materials on the tote before it's contaminated, saying only put these items in. That way the consumer knows that they can't put everything under the sun, including plastic bags. I'm not saying I knew either. But there has been education, and most education has only gone in through the billings. That's how people have found out about the changes, and a lot of people don't even see the billings, or they just go right through them when they pay the bill. The tote is the way to let people know what it is. We would like to work. I'd be supportive of helping waste management to, you know, find ways to more easily sort your materials. So because the market has changed, I do not support, just because the market conditions have changed, asking our citizens to pay a higher fee, because you're right, we'll never, if the market conditions go the other way, we're not going to see that either. So that's just not the right way to do business in a partnership fashion, but we could help. And if I would support that, I don't speak for anyone else except myself on the council, but I would support trying to help educate our citizens as to what limited items you should recycle to make things more profitable, less costly for waste management. I would support that.
Thank you. Do you have any ideas on just the sticker on the tote?
Number one, a big education sticker on the top of that tote. Don't put anything in here but this. And limit the items that should go in that tote. And state, if you're putting something else in here, you're at risk of a fine. But I don't want to charge them more. I mean, I want to help educate. Educate's
absolutely
positive.
Yes.
But educate them. I don't want to get that after the fact, the sticker after the fact. Oh, I found that plastic bag in there, so now I'm going to have to charge you. Or I will charge you if I see a plastic bag. Just make it very clear. Nothing goes in here except these items. And then I will put the rest of the stuff in my garbage tote. If you don't want it anymore, I just didn't know. And we've been so conditioned, I think everybody has, recycle every darn thing you can think of, or you're a bad person. So if it helps, I think in the spirit of partnership, we don't want you to, whatever we can do to help our partners, I think that's positive, but not just a flat rate increase.
Yeah, and you're right. And so, I mean, the last, you know, sort of piece and helping ensure that we have a sustainable recycle program is modifying the list of acceptable materials. We want to focus on materials that do have viable end markets, that are going to be repurposed and turned into something new as they should be, instead of wish cycling, which you've kind of touched on, where we want to put everything in there and, you know, hopefully we'll find some way to recycle it. That's just not realistic, right? And so the items up here are what we're asking to remove to help in the contamination battle that we're in, if you will. So from mixed paper, the cups, cartons, frozen food boxes that Councilmember Todd mentioned, that those items that have that waxy coating just don't break down. Scrap metal and aerosol cans, and then from plastics, the cups again, the plant pots, and those really thick, rigid plastic buckets.
You don't want anything dirty. Like if you can't wash out the peanut butter jar, don't put it in.
Yes.
It's got to be really clean.
You're absolutely right, Mayor. Yes. So it, clean, dry, empty, all those in its cleanest form possible.
Do you have any insights as to what efforts, if any, are being done with the packaging companies to package their products in a manner that is more lends itself to recycling?
I'm sorry, I don't. It is a fantastic point. You know, that manufacturers really, and those packaging companies need to get on board as well, but I'm not aware of what's being done on that front.
Do you have something else?
Good, you got the third slide. Because I think the third slide, list changes, is something I'm open to. It leads back to still contamination charges, which we had a debate about. And the first slide is a rate increase, and as Councilmember Holzclaw, or Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw pointed out, you can't have it, kind of can't have it both ways. Hopefully this is a temporary situation where we get really good on getting those contaminants out, and so that contamination charge goes away. Now you still have the commodity price issue, and we can debate about whether that's part of your cost of doing business or not. But I think this is something I'm all about doing. Through various circumstances, why you're standing up here and not Michelle, et cetera, and I understand that. If this was such a big deal, it would have been easy. It seems like it would have been easy to say, here's a new sticker for your cart, because we all have stickers that have the wrong information on them right now. That is just really simple for you guys to re-sticker those carts or mail them to us in a bright pink envelope, not with a bill, that says, this is the new sticker. Don't throw it away with all those bill inserts like we all do. Or if you're on auto pay, you don't see the bill inserts.
True.
You know, so there's a lot of people who don't see those inserts either because they don't get them or don't look at them. So stuff in your bill. I like the fact you guys only bill every 3 months, but that means that people don't get very up-to-date information. But a new sticker that says, this is all we want, and you are a good person if you throw away dirty cups and the dirty peanut butter jar and the plastic bags, tells people that it's a good thing to do, because we've been educated for the last 3, 4, 5, 10 years that recycle everything. So that's why you guys have electrical cord in there, which just really screws up your machinery, but it's got copper in it. Copper's valuable, yeah, but not in your machine. It's the trick is the MRF doesn't deal with
tanglers. Those things that tangle up our machines, the plastic bags do the same thing, and so they get caught and jam things up, cause some real problems. There are alternative ways to recycle your plastic bags, though, Councilmember Bond and Seckler, so don't fear. It's out there.
Thank you for the education.
That's part of the trick, too. I was going to say that there needs to be a kind of a concerted message. Right now we're talking about this contract and what's important for goes through your MRF, the material recycling facility, but those plastic bags can get put together and they go to the Fred Meyer store in the bin,
right.
And those turn into picnic tables and benches and, you know, Trex decking. That's still good stuff if it goes the right place. The question I've got is like, okay, that scrap metal, I'm not going to throw my nuts and bolts and old rusty nails in your thing anymore, but would the county take them? That's a question we collectively need to answer to our citizens that says, okay, aerosol cans can't go in the blue container, but you can still take them up to Airport Road if you want to, or whatever's right, because I don't want to have the problem just translated up to them, too, because then we're not really helping. I think people honestly want to recycle. We just have helped. It's been hard to educate. Help educate through our social media, through our stickers on your carts. I'm all in favor of doing those kinds of things.
Yeah, and, you know, it's important to note that there certainly has not been any communication about, you know, not putting these specific items in, because it is in our contract right now. That's why these items are up here. And so, you know, that's part of the request tonight. We'd like to get them removed so that we can move forward with some more education around these items, you know, not coming in.
So I think for me that I would say removing those from our contract, I'm fine with that. I'd go with that, no problem. Now, if it goes back to item number two, where now those are, oops, there's an aerosol can in Mike Todd's thing because I forgot, now it's a contaminant, I'm going to go, $25, you know, whatever. I do like the 1, 2, 3. I think people
after the third time.
I think people are going to get there, but the $25 hit would The phones down here would ring. They don't have my phone number on the website, but they've got these guys' phone numbers. And I'm concerned about the load on staff as a consequence of that. And it's a result of our citizens not being happy. Because we all want everybody to be happy with waste management and the service you guys provide. I'll bring it up. But during the, you know, there was a backlash of sorts during our Snowmageddon event, or whatever we want to call it, where a lot of bad stuff was said about waste management. And I get it. We get it. We understood what was going on. But there's a lot of people out there who are not still real fans of waste management because unrelated. But I'm just, you ought to think about the public relations part of this. You want everybody to be your friends and anxious to help you, not, oh, here's another. My bill went up, and there's this contamination charge, and they didn't pick up my trash that one time when there was snow 6 feet high on my curb, and they couldn't find my bin behind the snowdrift. You know, that's, let's not go there again.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Thanks, Mayor. Just lastly, I think you kind of know where I stand, but the message here is getting a little, not from anybody in particular, but a little convoluted, that the Mill Creek and the cities are not recycling less than they used to, or like they're not supposed to. China's standards have changed, and that's the only reason we're really having this conversation. So contract to contract, I would say that we stay, I would vote to not change anything in this contract. That's the way I see it now. That if we want to have this discussion in 2022, whether it's to not allow pots or whatever items we're talking about, I also fear that changing any piece of this could open the door for other changes. So that's kind of where I stand. Thank you.
Anybody else? Well, do you have anything else to add?
Nope. I think that, covers the request that I wanted to make. You know, it is important to note that there is no sign of the market going back to the way it was. So, you know, the higher processing costs, the lower commodity pricing, and these really strict standards on the materials that we're putting out is kind of the new normal. But I thank you all very much for your valuable, you know, feedback. And support on some of these items. Thank you.
I hope you'll work with our city manager on education, because I think the council is very united on,
yes,
we want to fix the problems. So whatever it takes, and if you do a sticker, it's got to be a big sticker, not a little one that can be, a big honking yellow something, or something that people can see and understand.
Thank you for that.
Very much for coming tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think the mayor's right. Education part of it, we're willing to help out there. I was going to ask the city manager, I don't know if there's conditions for, let's get back to the legal part of it. Are there conditions in the contract by which either one of us can say, let's come back to the table and talk about things like this? And you may not know right now, but that'd be, I think, a question you could come back and talk to us about.
Yeah, the short answer is no. It seems a quick reading. I'm not the city attorney, but it looks like the contract is pretty tight. The question I had was with regard to the cities you listed. It echoes a question the council asked. What inducements, if any, were offered to these other municipalities to negotiate a new contract that would increase their rates to their consumers?
The list of cities that I had that have approved?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't maybe understand what they approved.
What did they get in exchange? What inducement was offered for them to modify their contracts for their residents to pay more?
We made the same request that I'm making tonight, these three requests of a rate increase, a contamination charge, and changing recycling lists. Those were the same message, the same ask.
So there's nothing offered in exchange for them to agree to raise the rates?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. That's all I needed. The short answer, Councilman Todd, is my quick reading of the contract doesn't offer any opener language, so there's something.
Okay. I would be interested in looking at opening the contract. I understand Councilmember Cavallari, in general, you don't want to open things up because they can go bad. But I'm not interested in doing a hard line. We're not interested in working on reducing the items in the contract. I fully support reducing the contract as part of our education, because long-term, frozen food boxes and aerosol cans are not going to be something you're ever going to want. And so why not get on with it and help people start educating people about what's the right thing to do? Other municipalities, Harrington, Arlington, Stanwood, the ones that are in here, have said we'll reduce those things out. I think we also need to get it so Mill Creek is not different. I don't really want to do the 84 cents per account, but I think if our list matches other people's list, that helps. And so I'm in favor of getting on board with the recycling industry. Let's get our local city and our local locality doing the same thing so people across the street aren't confused about how come he's got this and I've got that. So I'm in favor of us working those kinds of things. I'm not in favor of the monetary kinds of pieces of it, but I'd be interested in looking at opening the contract to take those things out of that list, because I think recycling is important. I don't want to wait until 2022 to do something about it. Thanks.
Hey, Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw.
I just echo Councilmember Todd's comments, and also because I'd rather educate our residents and businesses now, so when our contract comes back up in 2022, we've done a good job of reducing this cost for waste management, so we're not going to be discussing them with a big rate increase in 3 years. So let's get them educated now.
Mark, did you have anything?
I'm fine with the re-education and letting the customers know that there's been some changes and you'd like their help. This can go in the garbage. This can stay in the recycle. The fee increase or fines or anything for me would be reopening the contract and negotiating a new contract for a longer term and locking in a rate that we feel comfortable with and that you guys. So if that's the direction that Waste Management wants to go, I'd be willing to talk about that probably next year, I guess, or whenever the time is right. Because I do think it's a pay now or pay later thing, and I just want to advocate for the folks in town, so we're both getting a good deal, not just the waste management side only piece.
So we can ask Michael to look at this and bring it back at a later date for a study session to discuss what you're talking about, opening the contract, but a crack, not the whole door. Okay, can we do that?
Yes, we can, Mayor.
Okay.
And Mayor, I just want to reiterate that with the stickers and everything, you know, we can't change that until the list is changed, right? We don't want to be going against the contract. So when we get there, we can look at bigger stickers or whatnot.
Councilmember Steckler?
One last question.
Sure.
A little bit off the subject here, but something I'm curious about. Does Waste Management offer a senior citizen discount for fees?
Yes.
And they do?
Yep.
I want to hear her say it.
Do.
And do we have that in our contract?
Yes, I believe so. I was trying to find it really quickly when...
Senior, under 60% or under 80% AMI sort of thing. It's a income threshold and over 65 or disabled or something like that. Commonly known, and it's also in this.
It is, and I'm not flipping to the right page right now, but I can certainly get the specifics and email that to you if that's okay.
Just curious, yeah.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
So assuming we do this re-education effort, and a year from now, is there any way to measure if we've been successful? Are you guys able to track and say, yes, we've been able to reduce our contaminated recyclings by 2%, 4%? How do we measure success?
That is a fantastic question that I am not sure on, but I can certainly, try and get some more information on that. I have not heard of that, a way to measure that.
Well, I would hope there would be, because you're asking us, proposing to us a rate increase based on the increased cost, so I would have hoped that would be based on some kind of measurable of what the additional cost is we're causing from our residents for the contaminated material, so I hope you could look into that.
And I don't know that it would be specific to Mill Creek is, I guess, because, like I said, our Cascade Recycle Center runs at about a 12% contamination rate currently, and so we can see that fluctuate as a whole, but I don't know that we have specific data for the city of Mill Creek, is what I mean.
Okay, Councilmember Todd Vinstekler.
We brought this up a couple of years ago. We asked that question. The trick is the truck dumps in a big pile, and it sits there for a little while, and then it gets shoveled into the machine. So where they actually see it on the conveyor, it's too late. But there are cameras on the truck, is how you guys can see that they're contaminated stuff. And so even though it might not be perfect information, if there was a way for the route drivers who are watching for putting that sticker on there, the contamination sticker. Gosh, we have been handing out 1,000 contamination stickers a week, and through our education efforts, we're down now to 750 or 500. Although that's not perfect information, it would be an indicator that's... I think that's good. I think we're not going to be able to... You're not going to see necessarily if Mill Creek is perfect and everybody else is bad. You can't see it down in Woodinville. But it'd be nice to know that our education efforts here were working, and that we could celebrate that with our citizens and say, look at this, good job, and keep doing more of it. Or not good job, you got to do some more because we're going to get stuck in the next contract. Thanks.
Okay, Councilmember Steckler.
Kind of took my same thought there, Councilmember Todd. If contamination stickers are utilized, that is the best way to determine if Mill Creek is reducing its contamination, because obviously these materials are going to be dumped together. But it does say something to having some type of a sticker measurement. I don't know if it has to be a fee, but something to show if we are recycling cleaner materials for waste management, and could be a good benefit for us come new fee negotiation time. That was it.
Well, thank you for coming and sharing all the information.
Yes, thank you.
And Mark Bond will not be putting bags in his recycling anymore.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until 2022.
Yeah. Okay, next up is old business and discussion of House Bill 1406. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor. Council asked a number of good questions last time we were all here. Mr. Rogers has prepared accordingly. We have also reached out to a number of resources. The most recent conversation I had was with Shannon McClellan, the legislative and policy analyst at AWC, and this presentation is in support of the information we've gathered from many sources. Mr. Rogers?
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, members of the Council. House Bill 1406, an act relating to encouraging investments in affordable and supportive housing. We had a really good discussion of this at the last meeting, and the city manager asked me to look a little further in and answer some of the questions that were raised by the council last week. The very first part of the agenda summary that I put together for you was cut and paste directly out of the week before. Some of the highlights probably the biggest thing is it could provide up to $25,000 of annual income for the city. It'd be for up to a 20-year period. The money would be used for acquiring, rehabilitating, constructing affordable housing, operations, maintenance of new and supportive housing facilities, and for smaller cities, rental assistance.
It could also be used for ILAs.
Interlocal agreements, and you could also pass it through. This is a credit against the state sales tax, so we're not actually increase the sales tax rate of our customers in town. It would actually come out of the state's cut. If we want to do anything on this, we have to do an intent resolution by January the 31st of next year. And then it doesn't actually commit us, but we would actually have to put in the implementing regulations by July 27th of next year. So there's some time to work on this. In our discussion last week, you did ask several sort of questions and bring up certain topics, and so what I did is I took the notes that were taken and the questions that came up. I restated the question as best we understood it, and then I provided an answer. So if you indulge me here, what I'd like to do is just go through those questions with you, provide the answers, and then open it up for discussion. The first one is, if the city is interested in receiving funds, does it matter whether the city and county adopts its resolution and or it's imposing legislation before the county? And this is, we talked about, is there a race to the money? I think that was sort of talked about a little bit. And so the answer is, it doesn't make any difference for the intent resolution, which is the deadline that's coming up this January. It does make a difference slightly. It doesn't make a difference for the city. We would get our money either way, whether the county or the city adopts implementing rules first. It is a little bit better as a whole if the county goes first, because they can use our sales tax as sort of a denominator for figuring out theirs, and then we get the, our same cut. So it would make sense to coordinate. So there is a bit of a difference, but it's not like either one or the other, or there's some a massive impact to that. The next question was, can the funds be provided to an agency like Alliance for Affordable Housing, or Alliance for Housing Affordability, which we are a member of, or also HASCO, which is the Housing Authority of Snohomish County? And could we, could AHA take that money and give it to various residents and split it out and give it to various residents of the city? And are there other agencies besides AHA that could use these funds? And the answer to all these questions is yes. AHA would be a great source. I think we did talk a little bit last week that the city isn't really set up with the kind of administrative power to be dishing out checks to residents. AHA is set up to have a regional focus on housing, and I think that that's probably the way we would want to go. HASCO is another great organization. There are other agencies that would also possibly be good organizations. I did call up Chris Collier of AHA, and they are talking to some of the other cities about it, but no decisions have been made. They are interested, just sort of the altruistic thing is, no matter where it goes, I think it's a good thing for the city to do to provide resources. This is the first kind of tool that cities have been given in a long time, and over the years, over the decades, the feds and the state have really actually lowered all the resources available. As far as the regional giving out to residents in the city, even AHA is regional, as I mentioned, so it's not likely that they would want to give out and keep sort by which jurisdiction gives or doesn't. The next question is, could HB 1406 funds support the mission of the Housing Affordability Regional Task Force, which is called HART, which is led by County Executive Summers? And the answer to that question is yes. Actually, there was a message sent to the city, or to all the cities, asking the city to do two things. One was to pass the resolution of intent, so they are supportive, the executive is. And the second thing was to continue to participate in this HART effort. Their report isn't due until December, so I don't know what their recommendations or strategies are going to be, but certainly they're going to require funds to implement whatever they come up with. So that, hopefully that could be supportive. And then the last question was, how are other cities going to use their allocations? Again, talking to the director of AHA, they have talked about it sort of in general conversations, but nobody's really made the decisions yet in Snohomish County. I tried to call some of my colleagues, but they're at a conference, and so I didn't get any return calls. But certainly we have time to answer some of these questions and to work with our peers and to sort of figure out what the best way to leverage these funds, if we choose to do it. I did take the liberty, although there's no recommendation or real action tonight, I did take the liberty of putting in a next steps section in the agenda summary. And the next step, if we want to go the direction, would be to sometime in the next month or two to do the resolution of intent. It leaves all the options open and doesn't commit you to anything, so there's no real risk in doing that. And that would give us time to sort of see how big the pot of money is, sort of what other people are doing and how we'd want to leverage that, and to make that decision whether or not by July to go ahead and actually do it. I think that Mr. Nelson makes a really good point about, it says up to 20 years. It doesn't guarantee it for 20 years, and we have experienced clawbacks, so I think that anything that we do should probably keep that in mind if we do decide to go forward. So that was all I had to say. Hopefully that helps answer some of the questions and clarify some of the discussion, and if there's any other questions, we'd be...
And we don't have to do whatever we do for 20 years. We could say, well, let's do it for 5 and then see what happens. I mean, to go into AHA or HART or something and wait and see.
Yeah, my understanding is there is a lot of flexibility on that. I don't know if you could even choose year by year. I think that AHA would probably want some sort of a long-term commitment because they gear up and they sort of plan their projects years in advance. But certainly we can leave AHA at any time and we could give it to somebody else.
I just think there's going to be some exciting projects in the future. Linwood nearly had a great one for homeless students. And we don't know what everybody's going to do, but I think that it's important that we keep our options open and prepare a resolution of intent. That's what it's a resolution of intent, right?
It would be cut. We would bring that in next month or two. One thing I was trying to find is how much, what are the taxable sales in Snohomish County to see how big this pot potentially could be. Ours is about $25,000, but it's probably hundreds of thousands of dollars all on an annual basis. You know, if we're 25 by ourselves, it's going to be a big pot. And so that, you know, we had a one-time windfall for AHA that came from Snohomish County for about $400,000 that they were trying to divvy up. But if you had something like that, you could really make a dent. You could make a difference. And it's not just pennies. So anyways, the recommendation would be to come back with something else in it as soon as we can get something put together.
I was going to say that list that we had a page of, I think, last week, came from a longer list that's available, and so all the cities are out there. You know, we're kind of small sales tax compared to Linwood is like 10 times our size and Everett's like 20 times our size, so there's a lot of money out there. But you're right, in the county and cities together, this is a bunch of money that the state, you know, we asked the state legislature to do something. They said, here's some money, and so we had to take advantage of it, because this, if we don't take advantage, they're going to go, well, you asked, and we didn't do anything.
Okay. Yeah, I went to the counties. This is AWC list. Put this together, and I think it only has cities. The biggest player out there is the county. I went to the county's similar organization, and I couldn't find the list in the little time that I had. I imagine it's probably on there somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, so are we sort of in agreement to ask them to come back with a resolution in a month or so, a couple of months when you get to it?
We'll work on it, Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for getting those answers, Tom.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, next up is the interlocal cooperative agreement with the Everett School Districts for the purpose of sharing costs associated with the school resource officer program.
Thank you, Mayor. It's been a very busy week, but I believe that we now have a contract that is acceptable for us to present to City Council. Chief Allen will give us the highlights and we'll discuss this.
Thank you, Michael. What you have is a hard copy in your folder. We did do a lot of work up till Friday afternoon when we reached out to the school district and said, hey, can we add something? They were very gracious, worked with us, and got that all taken care of. Tonight, maybe right now, the Everett School Board is hearing this same presentation from their side and getting ready to make a vote on that as well. So we foreshadowed this just a little bit last week. We've talked quite a bit over the last few years about adding a second SRO here in Mill Creek to serve Heatherwood and then to continue to support Mill Creek Elementary, and for all of the reasons why that has become necessary, and I think we've talked about that quite a bit. So here we are at the point. There is an amended interlocal agreement that is different from any that we've seen before. It has additional money associated with it to cover the costs of the cost associated with two police officers in the schools. That roughly works out to about 85% of salary and benefits, but it's based on a formula, based on an assessment of the amount of hours and the number of days and the amount of time spent by officers in the school. And like we talked about last week, this goes above and beyond just the 180 days of school and the day before and the day after. Our officers are participating in summertime events and camps and working with kids on weekends and holidays and lots of other things. And so the work we did to come up with the dollar value is reflective of that extra work that's kind of evolved over the years. Councilmember Bond was an SRO. It's a different world now than it was certainly then. It's a different world even as of a couple years ago. We've got a couple maybe former SROs out there who can tell us a little bit about their experiences as well. So the ILA includes some reference to making sure that we're reporting properly with the school district and the school district reporting properly with us. There's the local Government Accounting Act that's outlined in RCW that talks about making sure that We provide the service that they're paying for, and that there's no one benefits from that, so we need to work in accordance with that Local Government Accounting Act. I can talk about the dollar amounts if you want to. It's a three-year ILA, and there's a 3% escalator from year 1 to 2, and then 3% again from year 2 to 3. Again, that's to cover salary and benefits equal to about 85% for two officers.
Chief, I did have a quick question. I know we talked about the 85-15. The dollar figure you came up with, is there any reason we're deviating from the percentages of keeping it the 85-15 and we're going with a specific dollar figure?
Right, because the percentage, the 85-15, really is the what it boils down to. The amount, the initial amount that we have for year one is $218,764. The 85-15 isn't, that's not what we base this on. We don't say, okay, we want you to pay 85 and we'll pay 15. We want to look at how many days there are in a year and how much work we do. It just happens to work out to be that. And so the 3% escalator from year 1 to 2 and then 2 to 3 is to account for cost of living increases and what we expect, you know, wages and salaries and CBAs and those kinds of impacts over the 3 years. And that's why.
Really, the only reason I ask is if we're going to increase headcount, then that means open recruitment. That means putting a guy through or a woman through an academy. That means, you know, the FTO, all the nuances that go with putting another uniform on the road. So have those costs been incorporated? That's why I was kind of like the 85-15.
Sure. So as far as training, talk about the academy. Should we recruit for a entry level and have to send somebody to the academy? Our biennium budget includes costs associated with training a new police officer and academy costs. That's already built in with the thought that over the course of a two-year time frame, we will probably have to send somebody to the academy. So those costs are already built in to that. Some of the other costs that go along are the time for the training officers, because they're entitled to some percentage salary incentive while they're training new officers. Those aren't hard copy or hard costs that we've built into the budget, but our budget is built to accommodate those types of costs associated with it. One of the pieces I anticipate is, say, for example, we send our first bill to the school district in October, we certainly won't have hired a police officer by October, so we'll start to accumulate some salary savings over the couple of months it takes to recruit and hire another police officer, depending upon whether that's entry level or lateral, like we talked about last week. It'd be my preference to bring on and recruit a lateral police officer so we can reduce the 3 months wait time and 6 months academy and 5 months of PTO training. We can really compress that time as opposed to being just over a year to get a new hire on the street. We can get that done in a couple of months instead. So that would be what we would want to pursue. And we'll have to come back to you all with a budget amendment, because we're talking about adding another body to the roster in the police department. We've got the revenue to cover that associated extra body with this ILA, but once we get to that point, we're gonna go hard on recruiting a experienced police officer that we can bring out onto the street as quick as possible, so we can cover those costs.
I certainly appreciate that, and first of all, I'm a fan. I think this is a long time coming. I will say this: good luck on the laterals.
Yeah,
it's slim. I don't want to say slim pickings. I think that's kind of a poor choice of words, but there are a lot of incentives, if you will, being offered out there, and maybe a bit of overpaying going on now from what I've seen, having worked with some of our recruiting. So, yeah, cautious and optimistic.
You're foreshadowing just a little bit. I expect that when I sit down with our finance director and we want to come back with a budget amendment, we've discussed that. Boy, it's really competitive right now, and even one of our most comparable cities is the city of Mukilteo, and they're offering, I don't know, a $10,000 or $15,000 bonus to qualified lateral applicants, and so that's what we're up against. You know, the city of Everett's paying lots of money for qualified applicants. And so those are discussions that we'll have to have internally and see if we don't need to do that. Again, where do we pay for that? Can vacancy savings cover that cost? Certainly when we compare what it takes to pay a police officer for 3 months to sit here and push a broom around and file papers while they're waiting to get into the academy, and then we send them off and all the time associated with that, I think we can make that balance out pretty well. So with this ILA, I'm sorry, I appreciate the questions, but to bring us back to the ILA, this sets us up for that. It sets us up to provide a good service that we've, I think, all long wanted to be able to provide to the school district. So it's good for the community. It's good for the students. It's good for the officers to have another opportunity to do something with their careers and have some different experiences. And it's just a win-win all the way around. It took a little while to get here, but we had some great work done with the school district to kind of get us to this point. So our first step is to ask for you to vote on this ILA and authorize the city manager to sign it, and then we'll do our due diligence and come back to you later with a budget amendment and be able to kick off the recruiting process.
Through the chair, it'll actually be a two-step process. As noted in the second last paragraph, we will perform our diligence and present same to council in a future study session regarding the financial impact the new SRO position may have on staffing, the financial impact the new SRO position may have on overtime expenses, on human impacts from a human resources perspective, and the impact the new SRO position may have on collective bargaining agreement. And we're going to do analysis that identifies what our assumptions are in that analysis. As a part of that study session, then we want to make certain that we've captured any other analysis our council would like us. And then we discuss from there whether we're going to go for a budget amendment. So it's really going to be a two-step process that is thoroughly intended to invite council's participation in the analysis.
Thank you. Councilmember Todd.
Thanks. So those five things, particularly item number three, and then the second item number three is what I tried to talk about last week, and maybe I didn't do very well. I want to be a good partner with the school district. We've had a good partnership, and we need to continue to have a good partnership because schools are a big part of the quality of life in our city. But when you go into an agreement with a good partner, this feels a little lopsided right now. We're going to take one of Chief Elwin's perfectly good, well-trained, ready-to-step-on-campus immediately people and put them in the school, which is great for the school, great for the kids. I love that. But then we get the uncertainty of hiring somebody, financial cost of training them, but also the time that they are out of the first year, we're only going to really get a great officer for 6 months or so, because there's a time that where they're going to be in academy, there's a time they're waiting, there's a time they're doing the field training. So somehow the school district gets one of our very best assets, and we get the pig in the poke. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's that we get the unknown, I should say, the unknown of a new person we have to find. That just doesn't seem quite right to me. If we go back, and we can't go back, we can't turn the calendar back, but if we go back, the time to have been talking about this was 3, 4, 6, 8, 10 months ago, when we had a chance to say, yes, we agree conceptually on this. Yes, let's go out and start recruiting. Let's figure out how we ramp up to this. Somehow this sudden start, which is partly the change of superintendents and other things going on, our August break maybe made this up here, but I kind of feel like somebody's lack of scheduling and planning this has now become our sense of urgency. And so those five things in that paragraph are the things that should be answered first before I feel comfortable about going into a contract. You know, that all those things are uncertainties, and you've expressed, staff has expressed that those are things we need to work on. Well, what's going to be the result? We've already signed this contract, and we're just going to go, oh, shoot, we didn't think about the impact on our CBA. Or, oh, shoot, we didn't think about the cost of, turns out laterals are really hard to find. We can't even find any entry-level guys. Here we are 9 months later. We still don't have somebody. I mean, that could happen. So why do we take all of the risk? Why do we take all the uncertainty? And the school district goes, this is great. Now, again, that's great for the kids. I'm in favor of doing this. And I can't turn the clock back. But right now, from this point forward, I'd be happier with school district, this is great. We'll all sign this agreement that we're going to start looking for somebody new. And when we get somebody new, then not maybe that new person, but somebody out of the new people, the new guy or gal, and these fine people, is now you get one of our fully trained assets, not us getting stuck with a brand new person.
Michael, do you have a response?
No, there's two ways we can do it. The one is to say we're not going to until we have these other assumptions you've laid out accounted for. The other is to proceed with the current staffing and not only create a forecast based on those criteria that I read out loud, but possibly to have an experience that speaks to the next X number of months and to see what it bears out in terms of the analysis. Can we do this with the current staffing? Do we need to add an additional? Is it going to be a lateral? Would it be a new recruit? Or would the economy, if all forecasts seem to indicate that we are at the end of the largest historical expansion ever, is this a time to us to examine how we might be able to tighten our belts so that when collective bargaining comes up again, we've got the funds in reserve to be able to pay the percentages that we can all project are going to be requested?
And I appreciate you bringing that up, Councilmember Todd. I'm with you. I wouldn't advocate that the council proceed with this ILA if we don't feel that we can backfill that position, because it will be an undue hardship, really. We can accommodate that in the short term, but we can't accommodate it in the long term for many of the reasons that Michael mentioned with the CBA and budgetary impacts for overtime. And just the reality of the matter that, you know, when we have to do that, we make cops work 12-hour shifts with one day off, and we can't do that. We can do it in the short term. If we weren't going to accept this ILA, we could have just sent one of our officers to school already. We chose not to do that because we cannot accommodate that shortage in the patrol squad. That's why when the school district said, hey, we got a deal for you, it seemed like, well, let's explore this, and can we accommodate that in the short term? And that's the conversations we had internally in the police department is, can we accommodate this in the short term, knowing that when it's all said and done, we will have made that patrol squad whole again? And we talked a little bit about all those reasons and what those impacts are. But I agree with you. If we don't feel assured that we're going to make that squad whole, then we shouldn't proceed. But if we can, and I think that we can certainly paint that very clear picture for council that it's the right thing to do for the right reasons, then we should proceed. But if there's that question that we have concerns about economy and some of the issues that have been raised, then we may have to tell the school district no. And it would be very unfortunate to do that because we put a lot of work into this to get to this point.
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you, Mayor. So when we met with Dr. Cohn, initially it was, you guys got to do this and you got to pay for it. And I think there's a need at the middle school. I don't know if it justified us footing the whole bill. So I wasn't against it. With the new perspective of the current administration, the school district saying, no, we're going to do it the way we've always done it, makes me feel very comfortable with going. They're the ones saying there's the need. Okay, I'm not sure if the need is there at Heatherwood or not, but you're saying it is, and you're saying you'll pay the bill. All right, we can do that. That works. We'll put one of our guys in there. And then I do think we have enough to get through this. Like you said, there's a savings while we sort itself out, and we'll address these other things and move forward. But I'm in favor of this, and I think it's good, and I'm glad that the school district did step up and do it the way they came to decide to do it now, as opposed to where they were a few months ago. So I'm in favor of it. Thanks for doing it.
So are you comfortable with this tonight?
I'm very comfortable with it tonight, and I'm even more comfortable with us doing our analysis and our diligence to present this information in a future study session where we've all had a chance to reflect on it.
Okay, and could last week Councilmember Bond requested some specific analysis. Can we make sure that that's included?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other comments or questions? Councilmember Todd?
I'm still struggling with this. This is just not my style. My style is figure out all the details before I say yes to something. So I'm struggling with this, and if the council wants to do this, maybe I'm going to go along. I think when you enter a contract, you always have to look at, you know, hopefully things are going to go great. Hopefully we're going to find a replacement officer. Hopefully it's going to be a great person. Hopefully they're going to come to speed quickly, and everything will be fine. But I'm worried about if that doesn't happen, because we've already heard from several people that this market is not great recruits out there just knocking on your door. You don't have a list of 10 guys waiting, guys and gals waiting to start tomorrow.
So quickly, what is our list looking like? Do you have a lateral list or do you have an entry-level list?
We have neither right now. Because we are not actively recruiting with no open positions, we do not have a list. With our entry-level positions, we do have folks that regularly test through public safety testing. We can generate an entry-level list today. Well, not today. It's too late. But we could generate one tomorrow and have an entry-level list that we could start working on. For a experienced or lateral police officer, we can start the recruitment process for a lateral or experienced police officer right away once we've made that decision to go. Now, that's a matter of getting the right applicant at the right time. And that could be somebody's just waiting for this to come, and it finally did, and we get their application, and they're rock stars, and we roll. Or it could be we weed through a number of applicants until we can find the right person for the job. So no list right now for either, but we can start the process of generating that list pretty darn quick.
So that's part of it. And the other part of it is the risk as well is it, okay, so we go through this contract period and things are fine, but the school district, as is wont to happen to them, is that, oh my goodness, our funding is tough. We can no longer afford this. They might come back and ask for it for free, as the previous superintendent did. And we might come back and do that. Or they might just say, we can't afford it, and we really don't want that second person because we understand it's fair that we have to pay for those folks. And so then we're faced with, and I think this is where it comes into your CBA, is that now we have an extra person who we have a commitment to keep them employed under City Mill Creek. They've got our badge. They've got our paycheck, but we no longer have this revenue stream of $200,000 a year to pay for them. So not this year, not next year, not the one after that, but the year after that, we could be faced with having an extra resource. Now, there's, heaven forbid, there's not, hopefully there's not that kind of turnover, but there could be that kind of turnover. But we just got to reflect that the school district could, for financial reasons, say, can't do this anymore. So again, we're taking that risk, and that's what I'm thinking in my head is, how do we deal with that?
Well, there's a six-month escape clause.
Party.
Yes.
So they could say it's even faster. I think it's
at
the termination.
So the worst case scenario is we would have to lay somebody off. That's the worst case scenario. But you haven't talked about a few things. So let's just say in 4 years that changes. Well, you'd have to assume zero growth of any, you know, the farm, some other projects that are going to have impacts on our service levels. I appreciate the engineering and analytical approach, but I think we're going to be okay on this. I really do. Whether we end up with an entry level or there's good and bad, and I won't get into it now. There's some really good things about entry level. There's some really good things about laterals, and we can have that discussion when we decide a path on recruitment. If that's the path we end up going down to fill this vacancy, but just getting this person in there and doing this, I personally see it as a good thing, and I think we can sort through the other stuff.
But operationally, though, however, and I'll come back to your point, my concern is authorizing this ILA and sending one of our police officers off to school and then not replacing them. And that is a bad situation for us to get into, because now we're reducing our number of police officers on the street. The CBA impact, yes, in part is related to seniority and who might have to be laid off, et cetera, should a funding stream dry up. But there's also a lot of implications in the CBA on that impacts overtime and number of officers working on the street, like we talked about last week, what our staffing levels are. And if you have four people assigned to a squad, but you expect to have three people working all the time, invariably, somebody's going to be coming in on overtime. And when leave rules allow two people to be gone from a four-person squad, we're paying overtime. And our contract says it's that way. So if we reduce another squad to four people, then that's an impact on budget, but it's also a huge impact on the people that have to come in and work and get one day off working 12-hour days.
Councilmember,
that's my concern.
Councilmember Cavallari, then Steckler.
Thanks, Mayor. I'm glad we're discussing this because I think all of us, when we had our meetings with prior school administration, we took time out of our own day in good faith and went and had these conversations. And like Mark just said, that, you know, they asked us to foot the whole bill, and it just sounded ludicrous at the time, and it still sounds ludicrous. However, what really swayed me and what moved me to the other side was two things. That, first of all, the need. Need has always been there. Second was our city manager negotiating the 85-15 split, where essentially the same costs out of pocket are for two officers. Now, I share all the concerns that others might have 3 years down the line if someone might get laid off or and all these other things. You know, an agency our size, I mean, we don't go through retirees very often like where I work at the sheriff's office. You just don't see that, but it does happen. People, they move up in rank. I mean, millions of things. They lateral to other agencies. They move because their wife got a new job. There's a thousand things. So I think initially I worried about that too, but I think the need, the whole dog essentially matters more than the fleas here, if you know what I mean. So I'm going to support that on that basis. I think there is a need at the schools. There always has been. So I was disappointed that we almost had to twist arms just to get to this point. But if we're there, we're there. I say we go ahead. Thanks.
Here's Steckler, then Holtzclaw.
There's a couple of different issues that Councilmember Todd's bringing up, and then I also heard something that the chief just mentioned. Yeah, I'm thinking back a year from now when we had those meetings with Cohen about putting this officer in. There was two things that came up, and one was I listened to Councilmember Bond talk about, is there really a need there? They, you know, because they were asking us to put the extra officer in, and they want us to pay for it. And we asked you at the time, do you have someone on staff? Can you move somebody over there? We don't want to pay for it, but can you move somebody over? And I remember we went through a presentation where we didn't have the staffing for it that would put a hardship on us. And so we went back to the school and we said, no, we can't afford to pay for it, and we can't take somebody out of our existing staff. Now they've come forward and say, we'll pay for it, you know, 85%. What I'm concerned about is I certainly don't want us to consider now taking somebody out of our existing police force and putting them in there and not replacing them. I don't hope that's not an option on the table, because that is in direct conflict with what we said a year ago after our analysis, number one. And number two, I don't see why we would need to do that unless we're trying to say we'd like to pocket the money from Everett School District, which we certainly don't want to do. That's not the purpose of this. The purpose is taking care of the kids. And the school has stepped up and said, we'll pay for it. Councilmember Todd's right. There are some risks with this. I get it. I'm not going to downplay what you're saying, although I do respect everything that Councilmember Bond says with his experience. But I'm not – you do a risk assessment of how much risk is there. Yeah, I'm looking at the worst case, 6 months – we got a problem, we got some overtime we have to pay. You know, that's a worst case. I think we can do better than that. I think there might be some other options. I'm hearing that if we approve this today, we're still going to get some information in our next meeting that would allow us to not move ahead with this or something if we find some erroneous information. Is that correct, Manager?
Yeah, what we're looking to do is actually add form to this debate, take in the input from this meeting, and put together a study session that actually brings the data to the table.
Okay,
namely, are we going to be spending more money by not hiring an additional police officer? Where does that fall in terms of the collective bargaining obligations for us to have mandatory overtime? I understand this has been a provision that's been here a long time. That would factor into any analysis. What are the assumptions with regard to shift levels? What are the other human relations, human resources related impacts, and it'd be able to lay that all out in terms of what the chief was mentioning about others covering additional shifts, working additional hours. We want to be able to lay it all out, and I'm not confident that we've done the analysis. I don't have my arms around all the different impacts, and I want to be able to do this in a manner that doesn't put the cart before the horse, puts an amendment in front of City Council without us having done our diligence in a study session first.
That seems a little odd, though, to ask us to make a decision on this funding when we're going to get information at the next meeting to...
This is odd to be talking about
it's
this
kind of
in
odd,
September
yeah.
for this school year. It's only, I believe, because of the new leadership that we're even having this conversation. And what we're trying to do is capture the concern about the absence of an SRO at the middle school, accommodating their need, while us being able to absorb the shock of how it is that we do something so last minute. So I acknowledge that there's nothing normal about the sequence and the timing in which this is laid upon us.
And I understand the last minute, but we have a new administration, a new superintendent. We have a new game. That's why you couldn't have gotten an earlier notification on this, because the other administration had a different approach to it. But I think you'll get I would like to see Councilmember Tuggett's answers, but I'm even more concerned that if we're going to go down this path, if we're going to go down this path with the assumption that we are not going, that we're going to pull an officer from our ranks and not replace them, that causes me grave concern. Because especially the big stand we took a year ago, that we did the analysis, we can't afford to do this, and now because the school district has given us funding, we might not need to replace them. I got a huge opposition to that. I don't want to take a cop from the street because every school district gave us some money. I don't want to do that. I would not want and would not support that type of action going forward. But I do support getting all these questions answered and getting this additional information. It's a great opportunity. I mean, I don't want to overanalyze too much stuff here. This is a great opportunity to put an SRO in the middle school. Kind of a tough time of life for kids. Great to have an SRO there. I think that's really great, and I'm really proud of the Everett School District for coming back with the money.
Yeah. To the chair, I understand that we have some officers that already have experience in SRO. I'm not sure, Chief, if any have had applied yet or have submitted their interest in pursuing this.
We have an open application right now. The deadline, I think, Deputy Chief said next Friday, a week from, so the 20th. So we have an open application period for interested officers. Some who have experience may or may not apply. Some who don't may or may not apply.
Any submittals yet?
Folks here, I've not received anything.
Okay.
No, we'll hold on to all of those until we get to the 20th, and then we'll take a look at what comes in on that day.
I think it's fair to say that nobody likes how we got here. However, we do see the void that probably needs to be filled.
People waiting. Oh. Councilmember Holtzclaw.
Sorry, Mayor. We're having a
two questions. Might be three. Does the funding obligation take into account, or does it matter whether or not you place an entry level officer or a lateral into that position?
So the funding is only pays for the officer that we put into the school, right? Whether that's what the money pays for, is for the officer to be in the school. So that has nothing to do with entry or experienced lateral officers at all. That's a operational decision that we'll make when it comes time to recruit the replacement officer.
Right, but isn't a lateral going to have a higher salary and benefit cost to the city than an entry level?
Yes. So the dollar amount that we use to put this formula together is based on our current school resource officer salary and benefits. And so he's upper mid-range. So if we were to bring a experienced or lateral officer in, he or she would come in at about that same number. And when we looked at the numbers, we'd feel pretty comfortable that we've got the appropriate cushion in there to accommodate that.
So if you ended up placing a more entry-level officer into that position, we'd actually see some savings because we're going to be paying for more than what they're getting.
Sure, yeah. Well, yeah, sure, potentially. But like we've talked about the challenges with an entry level, that's a year plus salary and benefits that we don't get anything out of. So,
last question was playing off some of Councilmember Todd's concerns. If you had your druthers, would you rather implement this now or the beginning of this next semester?
Well, we all agree that this came very quickly, and I look at this as an opportunity that we haven't had, that we've been working on. If all things being equal, and we could take care of all the questions and hire an officer and go through all of that and then make an assignment and send somebody off to school mid-year, that on one hand would be a good thing. On the other hand, it would be a challenge to start a school resource officer mid-year. I think probably just, I don't know, if I look at the SROs in the back of the room nodding their head, that would be a challenge from that standpoint.
Hey, Councilmember Bond.
Thank you. So I see this as, I see this as two things. One, let's get the school resource officer position filled, move forward. Second, this opens the door to just have a conversation. The police department hasn't been on our radar. We've been struggling with all kinds of other stuff, and everybody in the police department's been doing a great job. There's been no complaints, and no news is good news. You guys have just been doing your thing. We've had you for 2 years?
It's been about three and a half.
Three and a half? and this creates an opportunity to just have a conversation. What are we doing? What are the staffing levels like? Are we short? Councilmember Steckler's saying, hey, I got all the information I know. If we pull one out, we have to have someone else in there. He might be right. I just want to hear it. I want to hear talk about the union issues. How many guys are on day shift? I didn't even know. It's been I'm way out of the loop, and I'm probably a little closer to than most, but I'm out of the loop. It's been a long time, and a lot of unfamiliar faces out there, a few familiar, but I just want to hear where you're at, what you're doing, why we need to do this person, how are we going to add another person. I don't expect for you to come forward and show that we don't need to fill the position. I just want to hear that if we do this, separate from, you know, the school district's putting this guy in there. Boom, that's done. Now that leaves us with this level of staffing. Is this enough to facilitate our mission or not? Is it going to have negative impacts? Is there going to be a savings? But is the negative impacts such that the savings is not worthy of consideration? I'm not against it. I want to hear the argument and have the discussion and just kind of get back up to speed on what you guys are doing and how you're serving us and how you're accomplishing the goal. We might find out we need two positions. That one position, you know, there's an argument that there's another vacancy in this. I don't know. Sure. But I want to have the discussion.
Right.
We've been tackling a lot of other issues, and the police department has really been not on our agendas and our radar much.
Right. We may find out that we need more than fill this one officer position. And if we do find that out, then that's a completely different hill to climb. This first officer position, the revenue stream exists, and I can tell you without getting into too great detail, because you know here we are on close to eight, we do need that position filled. And if we don't fill that position, we're already down to one detective trying to keep our patrol staffing where it should be. And if we pull another officer out of patrol, a lot of these folks are going to be working a lot more overtime than they are already. And you know, I think that's why Michael wants to be able to present to you some data. And I agree with that. We have some good idea what that's going to cost. You know, it's going to cost so many thousands of dollars every 6 months just based on past history. And we know that folks are going to be working, you know, 36 overtime shifts in a six-month time frame. And some of those things we know. And so it's – you don't.
Right.
I have the benefit of the doubt of seeing all this all the time. And so I do know those things, or the benefit of seeing this. My concern, however, is I don't – there's a risk. I don't, and I'm risk averse on this subject. And the subject is, we authorize the ILA, we pick an officer and we send them to school, and then we say, you know, we're not going to authorize that position to be filled. And now I find myself operationally being in a big hole, and that's my concern. So. I know you can't probably provide me any assurances to make me feel better and sleep well tonight, but that's my concern.
Well, I'm glad that you said that you can, you know, we have to work through this, because you're headed into the strategic plan, which is really about our future and what you need. We have the study that was done, the
EPSM.
Right, and of course they had their recommendations for what we need, and we haven't done all that. And so I certainly think that this position will be part of whatever your analysis is about where we're headed. We want to measure twice and cut once. And so I don't know what the recommendations are going to be, but I want to make sure that we have the ability to absorb whatever everybody is doing and comes up with recommendations. We have to have the ability to absorb it. Fortunately, you told us last week that that'll be done by the no later than second quarter of next year. So I'm very excited about seeing what our options are and waiting for the analysis. I just need to see the numbers.
Sure.
And we don't have the experience because we're not out there. I mean, I listen on my scanner, but and everybody did a great job in the lightning storm.
I think it's important to differentiate, though, between the strategic plan, which is that five-year vision down the road and who we want to be and where we want to get to, and the here and now. And this program with this school resource officer and the replacement when we pull that person off the street is the here and now, separate from the strategic plan. Certainly, everything touches everything else, but we're kind of got two different subjects right there.
Actually, it's all about the long term, what our police department, making sure that our officers have, you know, whatever it is that they need to be safe. And I don't know what you're going to come up with. I don't know when it's going to happen. I hope that it's very soon. And then with Michael's analysis, and I assume you'll be participating, so we'll get a chance to look at all the numbers and decide, with your advice, what do we really need, and you know, for the long term. Councilmember Todd, then Vignelle.
Thanks. Yeah, I guess great discussion. I thank you to my fellow council members for helping me on this. Fundamentally, Everett School District has identified a need for a second SRO at Heatherwood Middle School, and the good news is that they've now recognized that need comes with a price, and good job, you guys. There now, this is a different story than when we heard it. That's great. But I tried to express last week, and I'm hearing from other people too, I think that we're looking at, ideally, no impact on the greater community. Just because we make this great for ESD, Everett School District, doesn't mean we want to suffer on this side, either through long shifts for people, not enough people on the shift to respond when any of us have an issue. So I hear you guys saying that, and I particularly relish Councilmember Bond's experience and his insight, and this is one of the times I'm going to lean on Councilmember Bond and say, yeah, if he thinks this is a good idea, I think it's a good way to go. I do appreciate the conversation we've had here about how important it is that this is an extraordinary situation. I like Mayor Pro Tem's comment that ideally, from a planning standpoint, we wish this would have happened at a different time, but I also get it when you said the comment is they have an SRO start in January when the kids have already formed their cliques and their friends, and imposing somebody new as it doesn't work. So I get it that there's a, because of circumstances, a need to do that. So I can support this. Thanks.
When do you think somebody's going to be ready to start? I know we had talked about October 1st.
Yeah, so first-ish of October really is kind of dependent upon, we have applications due on the 20th, and then the following week interviews, and so there'll be a selection process. We bring the school district in and have them participate in those interviews and experienced SROs. And then kind of depending upon where schedules work out, we have a natural break in our patrol squads because they change shifts on or about the 1st of October. So right around in there, there's some training opportunities that we have the ability to take advantage of that first week of October. So we'd be looking at, by mid-October, which falls in line with our discussions with the superintendent about shooting for that 45 days.
Is that when you're doing a shift bid or something?
Shift bid's done, right? Yeah, it's all done.
That's so when the transition.
That's when the
How
switch
long does
is.
That last for?
6 months.
I just wish that this was a two-part thing, one for the Heatherwood and one for the high school. Instead of having everything all tied up, we could have dealt with Mike's excellent comments if we had had them separate, but a little late. Stephanie?
Thank you, Chief, for your presentation. I'm listening, and what I'm hearing that has me slightly concerned is just that you keep reiterating the deficit that you're going to be in once we actually, if we send someone over as an SRO officer. I'm in favor of the program, and I really want us to have someone there, and I understand the new administration is working in good faith with us now to come back to the table after their previous agreement. What I'm concerned about is that this is going to create a deficit, and you seem very concerned. So you're the chief, so are you comfortable, and do you feel that your officers are comfortable with the workload that's going to be placed on them in the interim, if we send an officer over there until that officer is replaced. Are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable in the short term. And that short term is exactly what we're talking about here, that we'll use the revenue from the school district to hire a police officer. I've had conversations internally with my staff and leadership, and but also with the police union about this, right? Because this is going to create an impact that will ripple through the patrol division, because somebody's going to get selected, somebody's going to have to move, and all these things are moving pieces are going to happen to make this, and then we're going to end up with a short shift. If we know that there's an expiration date on that, that this isn't just how it's going to be from this point forward, we can accommodate that in the short term. And that's why I make the point that if we don't do this, it's kind of a two-part deal. We need to be able to backfill that spot and know, all of us, whether it's we got lucky because we got somebody in 1 month and it takes us a month to train them, or whether it's 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, or a year, we at least know it's there and we've got that coming. And that gives me comfort in the short term.
We have experienced SROs on staff already, right?
We have officers that have previously served as SROs.
Michael, what do you want from us tonight?
Mayor, we'd like council support to approve this ILA agreement with the Everett School District. Yes.
We have a motion from Vince and a second from Mike. No?
I'll second.
Wait, we need to propose the motion to authorize the city manager to execute.
You were shaking, no?
I didn't hear the actual motion, but we should for the minutes.
Okay.
You know, make the motion to authorize the city manager to execute the interlocal cooperative agreement between the city of Mill Creek and Everett Public Schools concerning the school resource officer program.
I will second that motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is new business, acceptance of grant funding for the 2019 Historic Preservation Program expenditure.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Gordon Brink is going to be presenting on behalf of the city. Gordon?
You might want to wait till the police force exits.
Here, I thought they were here for me. I'll go get these.
Thank you, sir.
Are they all the same or?
No, all different. They're all different.
Oh, okay, well, hang on.
Four different ones, yeah.
Take a second to look at them, pass them along when you get the moment. But okay. You good not to wait for Vincent?
Yeah, just give it a second.
Oh, okay.
He's... Okay. The other thing, Gordon, I'll tell you is that podium moves for taller people if you want to push it forward.
Gather all these cords.
Yeah, can we just go ahead? I mean, this is...
It's a relatively...
We're running late.
Yeah, go ahead. So, okay, perfect. It's a relatively simple request from us. I think the council is pretty familiar with the project overall. The historical preservation project is a way that we're trying to encapsulate the history of the city. The idea is that we're creating these panels that will be put on the bridge between Frost and I believe it's Banner Bank. So we were given the opportunity to accept a grant from the city, or not the city, the Snohomish County Recreation, Parks, and Tourism to pay for the materials of the panels that we're looking to create. The amount is $7,806, and that'll cover the material costs. We'll be working with Public Works to do the installation of that. So if there's any questions on that, do let me know. We are going through some revisions. I'd ask council to give me any feedback. I am getting the actual digital documents so I can make changes as well. You guys have a little bit more time, but in order to get the full benefit of this grant, we do need to have it executed, built and billed before December 31st. So I'm asking for a bit of urgency in getting feedback from council on that. Is there any questions that I can
Could I make a couple comments?
Please.
Just as the county liaison to the Arts and Beautification Committee, most of you recall this, but just to bring everybody up to speed, we had long talked about creating a historical monument document dedication to the history of Mill Creek, how we came about to create a greater community feel about Mill Creek. This idea was one of many. After looking at costs and issues, this is the final one was these panels that will be permanent panels built into that bridge that will be able to withstand the weather and everything else. The good news about this, though, is this grant that Gordon's talking about is for the purpose of creating historical monuments in cities. And it was actually, I believe, I may be wrong, but a slightly larger grant. The good news to the council is the amount you're looking at approving tonight is the amount that the Arts and Beautification Committee has determined will be the cost to create this.
Materials-wise,
and installation too, correct?
Installation is not included in the grant.
The grant will not allow you to cover?
Yeah, they don't want to pay for the actual
So the city
labor.
Will have to cover installation,
correct.
Which is not much.
We're covering labor and working with the Public Works Department to actually make that happen.
So it won't, okay, yeah. Great. But the actual out-of-pocket costs will be covered
the
by
material
the grant.
Cost, yep, is supposed to be covered by this grant.
But it's a great opportunity for us to create that historical piece
and
I, for
I'm looking
city.
At the end also at Councilman Todd. Before I get comments on the feedback on the panels that you have in your hand, I want you to let you know that these are the original printed documents that we received in looking. The more updated panels are actually hanging out on the lobby here. Look at those in terms of content, not what I'm passing around. These are a refresher just because they look
Rogers out so you could see Councilmember Todd and me in this picture.
I can certainly see what I can do.
And I note that we have a Snohomish resident in the picture as well.
Okay, we'll see if we can smudge those out a little bit.
Okay, so you're looking for the council to approve Resolution 2019-582, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Mill Creek, Washington, authorizing the acceptance of the historic preservation grant funding in the amount of $7,806.
Yes, please.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously.
Thank you, Council.
Okay, next up is the consent agenda. We have lots on that. Looking through all my stuff. Okay, consent agenda.
Mayor, before you start that, I just wanted to mention, I came in, I've not had access to the checks and payroll yet, so I have not had an opportunity to sign off on them. I apologize. I came in, I thought they'd be in my box. They weren't there, and in the meeting started, I have not had a chance to look at them yet.
What do we do?
I reviewed them on the hard copy of the computer, so.
Yeah, but I believe we learned that isn't always right.
So I went through very meticulously, spent a bunch of time, and asked some questions of staff, and so I'm comfortable with what I did, but I'm frustrated with our process. Our process has got to get fixed, whereby we take the responsibility to do this, because it is a huge stack this time. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's some things that people should potentially so I don't know. With the committee of one, I'm not comfortable. I can make a committee recommendation of a committee of one. I recommend we approve these.
Who has them now?
They're in that bin over
the email that was sent to us is that they were in the office, in Gina's office, and they've been there all week.
Okay, here's the disconnect. I did not receive that email. I saw this on my agenda. And that's how I knew that I was to sign these. So if you did, I just reviewed my emails just now to make sure. So there is a disconnect here. I did not receive an email about them. So I apologize. I saw them on the agenda, and usually when that's happened before, I've come in and they're in my box. And that's what I came in and looked for, and then the meeting started. So I do think we need to fix this. I agree with Councilmember Todd. There's kind of like a... Yeah, this is the second time I've done it. The second time I must have missed the notification, but thought I would just do the same process, which is they were in my box every week.
Is there a reason they weren't in the box?
Stack
this thick. It's too.
That's why. Okay. They wouldn't fit in my box.
There wasn't a note saying to go in. I actually had a question I'd asked the city manager, and we haven't started the consent agenda because the consent agenda is not subject to discussion. I just wondered why. I guess these are payroll. So payroll was approved and sent out, but we, like, sometimes we've met once in August to do vouchers or something, but were all these things spent, but we haven't approved them yet?
Mayor, it's my understanding the majority of the checks have already gone out the door, and we're in essence talking about ratification of administrative action.
Standard practice, and
it is.
RCW says we can wait until the next regularly scheduled meeting. We used to have special meetings in August. RCW doesn't really talk about special meetings.
Right.
But this is an artifact of us not meeting in August. That's why there's a thick
stack. That would have been the last meeting. Would have been the first regularly scheduled meeting. So we're one way.
Bring in four more.
But who did the last meeting?
We didn't do a Wednesday. We didn't do an August, which we have.
City clerk may know more about that, but I think.
What is your recommendation to do since John hasn't had an opportunity to look at the voucher?
Happy to stay tonight and go through them all. I'm happy to do that.
Okay. The only concern, chronologically, is
right.
The council's not going to be able to approve.
Not be able to approve them.
I have an idea. Can he look at them while we're in executive session, and then we'll come back out and pass them?
Yes.
It gives him to look at it?
I don't see it.
I spent an hour on it, but go ahead.
Problem with that, there's a lot there.
I know. I'll take them in the meeting with me.
All right.
Okay, so why don't we just pass on the consent agenda?
I'll sit next to you, Count. I'm sorry, Mayor.
We'll pass on the consent agenda and come back after executive session and take action on the consent agenda.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Is that okay?
Fine. So may I make some, we're not on the consent agenda, but may I make a couple of comments and maybe it'll help Councilmember Steckler or others reflect on this. First of all, I want to say thanks to staff. Tara and your staff. From the bottom up, they said, hey, let's provide some more supporting documentation for some of those elements, particularly on the sales and use tax. I've always wondered, why is it $10,000 this time and $1,000 that time? So they provide that information that's in your packet. So I think it was really useful. So thank you for doing that. The other one is a philosophical thing. So on one hand, we shouldn't be digging in the weeds. But in going through the vouchers, you know, we've talked about wanting to have tourism. So we've had ads in the past for tourism to bring people to town. We've also talked about we love sports and youth sports in particular. I'm highly supportive of those things. The vouchers that you'll find in there is $2,000 for an ad in an East Side Cities magazine advertising our basketball recreational program. We've got to review stuff at program level and quit doing that. That was a week. That voucher, yes, we ordered that ad. Philosophically, I'm opposed to us advertising our basketball program to kids that live in Bellevue and Kirkland and awful. That just doesn't make sense. So I know it's a different administration.
Just to speak to that for a second, I apologize. That is actually an oversight on me coming back into the city in July, and the requirement of that was about 6 days later. And we didn't actually understand what we were doing with the advertising because the individual who set up that account had left at that point. We will not be doing that again. We have learned something, and it is definitely going to be, we're advertising the Veterans Day parade for that. So that was the goal. There was a misunderstanding among my department in that. I apologize.
While we're on that, I would just, that magazine entirely, I just question whether that's worth $2,000 for that magazine. That advertising to the magazine's stated position is we are the wealthy 425. 425 is the name of the magazine. It's the wealthy people on the east side. It's all about east side cities. I really don't even think you can convince somebody.
Fair enough. And this is the final piece of the contract, I believe, is this last ad. So it will be reevaluated moving forward, and your thoughts are definitely taken into consideration. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move down to reports, and I'll skip mine for the sake of time. Councilmember Bond?
No report.
Steckler?
No report.
Vince?
Yes, Mayor, if you'll allow me just a moment here. Tomorrow is September 11th, or the anniversary of the attacks in 2001. every year when that rolls around, it brings up a painful moment, not only in my life, but I'm sure quite in many others. I think FDR said, well, I won't quote FDR, you try to find some sort of beauty that comes from the ashes of such a horrific event, and you're left with nothing usually. However, yesterday I learned of something that kind of started the healing process for me personally. FDNY, or the New York City Fire Department, is going to have one of their biggest graduating classes of all time. That's not the story here. The story here is 15 of those cadets are children of firemen and firewomen that died on 9/11. Think about that for a moment when you think of words like honor, courage, and bringing it forward. People that could have decided to just simply do something else in life, especially given their circumstances, but chose service. I say that because, you know, so often I think public service people in uniform, especially with some of the rap that they're getting in New York, throwing water. I just recently read Chinese food and milk on some police officers. It's offensive on every level. I just can't explain it. And then you hear something like this, and then you read it. Anyhow, I wanted to share that with everybody because a great book I read, Beauty for Ashes, this is the definition of such an event, to pull something so beautiful out of something so horrific. Thank you.
Michael, do you want to tell them what you're doing tomorrow?
Yeah, it actually was prompted by an invitation for a regional 9/11 event. We're pulling this together, admittedly at the last minute, but the City of Mill Creek employees are going to gather at the base of the flagpole outside of City Hall for a moment of silence. I'm going to have minimal words, but I'm hoping that this is going to be the start of a tradition in the City of Mill Creek to have a local recognition on September 11th each year.
And what time will that be?
That will be at 8:30.
Stephanie? No report. Brian?
I will be attending the HEART meeting on Thursday that I thought was last Thursday when I showed up there, and that's a separate issue. I do need a couple minutes of your time with your indulgence because I need a little direction. The background is this. The first two meetings, Councilmember Vignal attended the first one in May. I attended the second one in June. And after that second meeting, they had the representatives on HEART fill out a questionnaire, 25 pages long, whole slew of potential options. Asked for everyone's input on, is this something that we're very interested in, somewhat interested in, not interested at all? So between the June meeting and the July 18th meeting, which I didn't attend, I was in Montana, Councilmember Vignal went again, the staff assembled kind of all the results of that. And from those results, they created three work groups. One was looking at options for funding, public outreach, and policy and regulatory work group. At 9:44 this morning, I got the email with about 150 pages of these work groups and their recommendations that we're going to be discussing on Thursday. So I've not had a chance to go through them in detail yet, but I have scanned through the funding one. And there's two recommendations I wanted to bring to your attention. You know, some of them are a little bit innocuous. The suggestion is, you know, dedicating surplus properties for housing. One of them is a slush fund, like we talked about with 1406, pooling our resources from the counties with the sales tax and using that. But two that stood out, one would be to dedicate 10% of new construction property tax revenue, another slush fund for affordable housing. Not a new tax, it's just from new construction, taking 10% of that tax and pooling that. But the one that in particular I wanted to kind of just throw out there to get thoughts so that it's not just Brian on speaking on behalf of Brian at this meeting, but is, and it was kind of interesting reading the notes, one of the options that was in the summary survey was a countywide affordable housing tax, affordable housing levy. And I responded that I thought that was a low priority, that there's a lot of other things that we need to be looking at. And it looked like out of the 18 people who responded, only 7 people thought that was a great idea, although the group mustered the votes at I think Cassie Franklin from Everett led the charge to get that back into the work group study. So one of their recommendations is to pursue a countywide affordable housing levy. Numbers that are in the report that I've gleaned just from glancing at it today was that for every 10 cents of a 1,000 valuation, they could generate $13.2 million per year based on the total tax base in 2018, which their numbers, and again, I don't know how they figured out the average household, but based on an average median price in the city of Everett of $377,000, it'd be about $37 a year. So adjust that for what the median value in Mill Creek would be. What I don't understand is, I haven't dived into yet and got answers, is somehow they think over 10 years that could generate 2,650 affordable housing units. I'm not sure how they arrive at that. My personal belief is, I'm not sure, it seems like these groups' first reaction is, let's find more taxes. Because my first reaction was, we've got the Vintage putting in 356 workforce housing units in Mill Creek, and that same developer is either has built or is building 3 different facilities, one in Marysville, one in Arlington, and one in Linwood, that has 700 units. So right there off the bat, we've got a private developer that has built 1,000 units of affordable housing in the last couple years without having to go to the public asking for a levy to get public dollars. My other concern is that, and I think I brought this up before, what I'll be bringing up on Thursday is, so far the recommendations really don't address the fundamental problem with affordable housing right now, and that is the lack of supply. I was an econ major, and there's very little I remember from econ, but you have a supply curve and a demand curve. And when that supply curve becomes inelastic and doesn't move because you don't have supply, the price of the commodity goes up and down rapidly depending on the demand. So when the demand peaks, the prices go up like we saw in 2007 and like we're seeing now. When the demand drops because you don't have supply, the prices drop drastically like we saw in 2009 and 2010. So my concern as a resident, being with a prospective levy coming at me, is if you don't address the supply issue, you're just throwing money after the problem, and you do a levy now and not solve the affordability issue with the supply of the availability of land, you're just going to be coming back to the voters for more additional levies because you're not solving the problem. You're putting a Band-Aid on it. You're taking the Flonase and dealing with the symptoms of your cold, but you're not actually dealing with the cold itself. And so, you know, I think it's a worthy thing to consider, but from my perspective, it's not high on my list of priorities for something that we should be looking at. And before I took that position on Thursday, I just wanted to throw that out to get others' thoughts. And again, I'll forward tomorrow to the city manager and Gina all the materials. So if you want to go through the 150 pages, I haven't made it through all of it. But I just want to, that's kind of the direction that this is going on the funding side. Lots of ideas of how we can raise more taxes and go to levies, and my personal view is I think our residents are taxed out. I mean, they already haven't approved a school bond measure to increase school capacity.
Fire District 7's levy failed. 58% voted no.
Oh, yeah. So I just want to throw that out there for discussion consideration. That's kind of where my head is on it. But if the will of the 7 of you is something different, let me know.
I think you're, at least for me, I think you're on point with what you're talking about. I think if somebody had a really good idea for how we're going to solve the supply problem and it took some dollars, then I'd be willing to listen. But just raising the dollar so we've got a pool of money to go waste it on, in my opinion, waste it on something is not a good way to go at this. So I don't think we're there. 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 2 years from now, would I be open to looking at a different tax? I don't know, maybe, but right now, I don't think that's the first way you go at it. We got to know more about how we're going to solve it. And I think your point, I think you should make the point that there are private developers, private business that are addressing this problem in various fashions. What can we do to make it reasonable? That's fantastic. That, like your vintage example, there's probably others like that, or could be others like that, that are making a bigger dent than just government throwing money at it. Thanks.
Anybody else? Okay, I agree with you, and there's, I saw the polling for that last year, and you know, there's more tax measures coming down the pipe, and everybody feels theirs is like life or death. So, anything else?
Oh, that's all I had. Thank you.
Mike?
Couple things real quick. You probably just got an email that talks about the public official's reception. This is directed to us as public officials and to our state legislators, but it's also really a chance to connection for legislators and city council member to meet with businesses. Economic Alliance member is all about not with each other, not with our state legislative jobs any time, but this is a chance to talk to
businesses. Ignore the email you got on it. It's Thursday the 10th, not Tuesday the 10th, as the email said.
Yes. Yeah. If the 10th is correct, the Tuesday was wrong. It's messed me up. One last final bit. I don't know where we are on this, but the planning workshop, I'm planning on going next week on our week off. I think several of us are going. I'm looking forward to that as an opportunity for us to all get more conversant and work together as a team in terms of how do we face the kinds of things that maybe we're going to talk about later on today, or stuff that is difficult to do, but it's important that we do it well.
And as long as we're on that, Mike, the Vision 2050 thing, the letter, can you tell me where you two guys are on that?
I think that's what Tom put in the packet here, was the three of us got
to. Yeah.
I think we got to a point where I think we agree on a pretty good.
Yeah, there's one paragraph where I had put something in is about the UGA expansion. It wasn't advocating for it. It's just trying to make clear that from my perspective, it's important the county have that option, the county council, to consider that as one option for dealing with the growth. Because if they don't have that option, it's that much more growth that's going to be forced upon the cities, Bothell and us, in the Southwest UGAs to accommodate that growth. And so I can live without that in the letter, but I think we're all philosophically on the same page with that issue, but I understand Councilmember Todd's point. So I think we're both comfortable with the 2050 letter as it was drafted. I think the only thing, Tom, that I might suggest the thing that gets me about this Vision 2050 that doesn't get talked about, and we touch upon this in the letter, is on one page, page three, it recognizes Vision 2050 recognizes that business as usual will not be enough. I don't think that can be overstated enough, the changes it's going to take. I mean, just today, and this plan calls for putting more density along the transit corridors. Just today, I was reading a letter to the editor from Edmonds, where the guy was arguing, don't mess with our single-family neighborhoods. We don't want more growth. We don't want more ADUs. We don't want townhouses. Oh, yeah, and don't put it on Highway 99 because that's going to impact us too. That just kind of highlights what we're having to deal with as a region. I mean, the public just doesn't get it. They don't get the magnitude of the change that we have to deal with to accommodate these people coming. So it's going to take some pretty dramatic changes. And, you know, again, I've said this before, and Mike, the passage that I was referring to, it doesn't come out and state that acknowledge a Vision 2020. I had it marked, and now I can't find it. Oh, here it is. So it doesn't come out and say, we acknowledge that we messed up with Vision 2020 and 2040. But what it gets there by saying, compared to past trends, the strategy encourages more population and employment growth in the largest and most transit-served communities in the region. That's what I was referring to is they implicitly acknowledge that where we've planned for the growth isn't where it's been happening. And my issue with this and the call to action that they touch upon that we need to hammer on is it's going to take dramatic action at all levels of government, from the state, the county, and down to our local municipalities, to make changes if we want this plan to happen. I mean, it's going to make us relook at our permitting process so we can get stuff through faster, so developers can bring stuff to the market. It's going to look for us getting creative at all levels. So I didn't bring my soapbox, so I'll get off from what I had now.
So I would say, here, the first part of what Brian just said, quote that in the letter. That would be, so go back to the recording. I can't, I'll botch up if I say it again.
I don't remember what I said.
I know, but hopefully Gina got it recorded.
That was good.
That was pretty good, because you said it's not the business as usual, and we're going to have to, it's going to be, I can't, like I said, I can't repeat it, but it was.
Page three of the introduction.
So if you got a little time to throw that in there, I think it's, I'm comfortable with you fixing that letter up and making it go.
And it'll show up, when you look at the audio recording, it'll show up figure about 823.
Sure, yeah, you're the expert on this.
So what I tried to do was take all the discussion that we had last week. I did incorporate a point about jobs housing mix that was brought up by Councilmember Steckler, that even though we're improving the trend, that there's still more work to do there. I did, I stated a way that make sure that we're not against clean air and water, but we need to stick to what's minimum in the state law, as opposed to a bunch of different agencies that maybe don't have elected representatives, and it was just very open-ended, and so I think I made that change. And I also incorporated the thing about the market factors, dealing with something above and beyond what was in the Tomorrow letter that went out. So that's how I tried to address that, as far as the UGA, without specifically saying anything about the county as UGA expansion. Regarding about the plan having identified what had happened and not happened, I just basically changed it. What happened isn't exactly as planned, as opposed to trying to put it back. I think I can add to that language that you talked about earlier, and what I would recommend is that I make that attempt, send that back out again. If you buy off there, then I would put it on letterhead and then have the mayor come down and sign it. It's due by, we still have a little more time. We have until Tuesday, I think, next week.
It was Monday, the 16th. So
16th, yeah, yeah, 16th. So I'll get it done by the end of the week.
Or sooner.
Economic Alliance Advocacy Group had a discussion about this morning. They pointed out that the first bullet on the first slide was important to have a strong economy and wonderful environment. But if you look at the table of contents, economy is the last paragraph. So the reaction this morning was, we talk about strong economy, but the business people had to read to page 145 before they found anything for them. So it's kind of like we reacted to the climate change being so early on, they had that same reaction. So Economic Alliance is also putting together a letter. Talks about some of these same things. But
do you have anything else? Michael, do you have anything?
No, we do not. Here we were just talking about a possible need to extend the meeting.
Oh, well, that's definite.
Yes.
So, okay. So now we're down to audience communication. Anybody want to talk to the council? Actually, let's go ahead and extend the meeting to...
How much time do we need?
How much, Michael, how much time do you need?
We would say 30 minutes tops.
So if we extend it to 9:15?
Up to
9:15?
Up to 9:15.
I'll make a motion to extend to 9:15.
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Hi, Carmen. Name, address, 3 minutes.
Hi, Carmen Fisher, 14623 Apartment B101, Mill Creek. All right, I don't like to be critical, so I may get the shaky voice. But I'm a law and order person. I'm a rules person. I really like rules to be very clearly and strictly followed, and at least a couple of you have told me that that's how you are, too. And I'm uncomfortable with how the thing with the consent agenda went down. Like, to just say, well, we're talking about the consent agenda, but we're not really talking about the consent agenda, doesn't seem like a strict interpretation of that rule. And that's a small thing, you know, but a stitch in time saves nine. And I just, you know, I just feel like you all need to be very clear on the rules and to follow them very, very clearly, and I would appreciate that. And on the rules topic, you know, I'm sure you guys are on top of this, but please don't forget to announce that you've got a meeting going on if you all attend the meeting on Tuesday. And then I'm going to say two nice things to kind of get myself past feeling like I'm yelling at you about something petty. Councilmember, wow, I forgot your name. Cavallari, I should know that. I really appreciated, you know, you just acknowledging the anniversary tomorrow and the fact that you gave us. Like, I like knowing that fact, so thank you. And Councilmember Holtzclaw, I was also really appreciating what you were saying about really being very serious about business as usual is not going to work. Like, I think that is such an important message. And I also like, you know, when you were mentioning earlier with the development of the farm, and we also have Heatherwood Apartments, like, I think Bull Creek is actually doing a pretty good job meeting our, like, RCW obligations to have different affordable housing options. And I think let's keep doing that because we're doing good on that. Thanks.
Okay, anybody else? Will, real quick.
Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive Southeast. In conjunction with what Brian and Mike were talking about, read an article, the government apparently is quite giddy with how well workforce housing is going for them. Apparently doesn't cost them any money other than borrowing from China, I guess. And one other point, the Kent Cummington RFA failed again. Instead of getting 60% of the vote, they only got 53 as opposed to 58. So to me, that's a plus. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, with that, we're going to recess to executive session to consider security risk assessment matters regarding computer and telecommunication networks in accordance with RCW 4230-110-1IA-2I. And we'll be in session up to 45 minutes, and action will be taken on the consent agenda when we come back out.